The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. From a disturbing, brutal childhood to brokering multi-million-dollar business deals, Nona Jones became a huge success story. Then she realized her past battles were waging a present war.
I didn't realize that I was holding on to bitterness, that I was waiting for my mother to apologize, that I was waiting for her to admit her wrong. And those are things that just never happened. And so because I was waiting on that, I couldn't experience the joy of the great things God was doing in my life.
Next.
Hey, welcome to Life Today. I'm Sheila Walsh here with my co-host, Randy Robeson. And we have a great guest for you today. When I first met this woman, I remember her walking into the room and I thought, this is just like the consummate professional, executive, pastor, business leader. And then I got to know her and discovered she has quite a story to tell us. So please welcome Nona Jones to the show. It's so great to have you with us, Nona.
Oh, this is my pleasure, Sheila. It's so great to be here, and thank you for having me.
Now, your book, Success from the Inside Out, Power to Rise from a Past to a Fulfilling Future. Would you take us back? Because honestly, when I read about your early childhood, A, it was devastatingly shocking, and then to see where God has brought you. But would you take our audience back to what that was like for you?
Sure. Well, you know, I often think that we walk into the successful chapter that a person's life is on, and we just assume that's the entire story. And I know you know that to be the case, but I was born to a mother who didn't want to have children. She grew up in a home where there was a lot of poverty, a lot of violence. And so I think at an early age, she decided she didn't want to have children. But my mother and father were married for 13 years. When she found out she was pregnant with me. And he was excited because he wanted to have children, but she actually cried. And unfortunately, halfway through her pregnancy, he found out that he had terminal stomach cancer. And he passed away 2 months shy of my second birthday. And it was shortly after that that my mother became involved with just a string of men. They came in and out of her life and my life until she settled on a guy who became her live-in boyfriend. And I was about 5 years old. And I knew pretty early on that I didn't like him, which is why I always tell parents, if your child doesn't like someone, pay attention to that. But she allowed him to move into the house. And shortly after he moved in, he began sexually abusing me. And that experience, it not only devastated me and my identity, but I think it was compounded by the fact that he told me, he said, you better not tell your mom because she never wanted you anyway. Mm. And it just devastated me. So I didn't tell her for a couple of years. But after I did tell her, I was about 7.5 years old. She had him arrested. But on the day of his release from jail, she took me with her to pick him up and brought him back home, where he proceeded to continue abusing me. So it was a devastating childhood. And I think the fact that I didn't grow up in a Christian home made it worse. I didn't know anything about God, hope, Bible, church. And so I tried to take my life at the ages of 9 and 11. I truly had no sense of hope in my life. So I tell people when they look at me today, I'm just like, you know, I am a statistically improbable product of grace. God truly reached down from heaven and blessed and favored my life. And so I'm so grateful for that.
Amazing.
At what point, Nona, did something change? Was there someone that intervened when you were a teenager? Was it an adulthood? Because obviously, something had to happen to give you an opportunity to heal, to give you some hope for a future, because that's a very difficult thing to ever overcome.
Yeah, no, that's such a great question. So the fact that I didn't grow up in a Christian household, when I was 11 years old in the sixth grade, a classmate of mine came to me and she invited me to go to church with her. And I had never heard of church, so I thought we were going to go over her house and maybe play over that weekend. But when her mother came and picked me up, we went to this church place. And I remember when we got out of the car, there were all of these families walking up to the building, holding hands, and people were smiling and laughing. And when I walked in the door, people who didn't even know me, they hugged me, they welcomed me. "We're so glad you're here." And the very first sermon I ever heard preached, the pastor said, "God is a father to the fatherless." And what he didn't know is there were so many nights that I cried myself to sleep thinking that if my father had lived, that I wouldn't have experienced what I experienced. And so I think it was that moment that spoke to the hurt and the pain within me that really awakened me to a sense that, wait a minute, there is a God that sees me and loves me, that I was fearfully and wonderfully made. Suddenly, I think it confronted what I thought was a deficiency in myself and replaced it with the idea that I did matter and I was loved. And so that really changed the trajectory of my whole life.
You know, when reading your book, Nona, made me realize the power of the words that we speak over our children. Because I think, you know, you talk about when you're so young, you know, 9/11, suicide attempts. But it seems to me that those words had been spoken over you by your mother's boyfriend. When you're told that you have no worth, that even your mother wished you hadn't been born, you know, do you believe that that contributes to so many people who then attempt suicide? It's because of words that have been spoken into their life?
Absolutely. Words have power. I mean, the Bible tells us that life and death are in the power of the tongue. And I think that's why it's so important that as parents, and frankly, just as people, that we choose our words carefully. When someone already believes that they have no purpose, that they have no value, when someone says that, it's almost like affirming what they already believe about themselves. Yeah. And it makes them realize, oh, wait, maybe I don't have any purpose on this earth. And so we do have to choose our words very, very wisely.
You know, the title of your book that Sheila mentioned a moment ago is Success from the Inside Out. And in that, you talk about how success really is not something that we can just do or conjure up on our own, but it has to be done within us first. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I was very blessed. I was very fortunate. So despite all the trauma and the dysfunction of my past, the Lord graced my life. I was able to achieve success at an early age in the professional world, but I could never experience contentment. I could never experience joy. And I remember, you know, I would get awards and accolades and, you know, I had the nice car and house and clothes and all those things, but I never felt a sense of peace. And I think that's what really started me on my journey to understanding what is success? And it led me to the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 8, where God told Joshua that if you meditate in my law day and night and do what I have said do, you will make your way prosperous and you will have good success. Mm-hmm. That qualifier good struck me as interesting, because in order for God to say your success would be good, it meant that there was a success that was not good. And that's what I was experiencing. And so the idea of success from the inside out is that success begins within, because there's nothing you can accumulate around you that will fill a deficit within you. And only God can heal what's broken within us.
You know, I was thinking about a gentleman I met on a flight not so long ago who is a very successful businessman. And we got talking and he said, you know, but when I put my head in the pillow at night, what I hear is my mother saying, I wish you'd never been born. And I think of the number of people in our nation who have not been able to confront the brokenness that is inside. How did that process happen for you, Nona?
This is such a good question. I think, first of all, I totally resonate with that gentleman, because there were so many nights when I literally heard the voice of my mom telling me that I was unwanted, that I was stupid, that I would never be anything. And it's funny how your life can defy all of those odds and you can still believe that true, right? Right. You can still believe that true. And so I think what really started me on the journey to, I would say, re-understanding my identity, I say re-understanding because I didn't understand, was forgiveness. The power of forgiveness is so underestimated. I didn't realize that I was holding on to bitterness, that I was waiting for my mother to apologize, that I was waiting for her to admit her wrong. And those are things that just never happened. And so because I was waiting on that, I couldn't experience the joy of the great things God was doing in my life. And so for me, it really became, you know what? I have to forgive her, not necessarily because, you know, she's sorry, but because I deserve peace.
Right.
And once I came to that realization and I was able to just release her from the burdens of my past, I think that's when I began to heal and I began to experience joy in my life.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that can be very difficult because take like that boyfriend, the abusive boyfriend. He needed to go to prison. He didn't need to just be forgiven, you know, at least from a legal standpoint anyway. How do you reconcile the need for justice and not denying when people do wrong with the idea of forgiveness?
Yeah, oh man, this is good. I'm glad you're asking this. The reality is when a wrong is committed, there is an injustice. And it creates an imbalance, whether it's a spiritual imbalance, psychological, emotional, it could even be a physical or material imbalance. Sure. When that imbalance is created, we naturally want to rectify it. The challenge becomes with what do we have the power to do? So in the case of her boyfriend, for example, the legal system could hopefully rectify the physical imbalance. But what it couldn't rectify is the psychological, emotional, and mental imbalance and the spiritual imbalance that it created. And I think that's where forgiveness comes in. There are certain limits to what we call natural justice can fix, so much so that, you know, he actually apologized for what he did. But that isn't what healed me. What healed me was forgiving him for what he did.
Mm. Wow. That is so powerful. I love following your Instagram posts, Nona. I find them really challenging. And you talk about the fact that the next generation, the younger generation, are watching us. What is it that's on your heart about that?
Yeah, so the Pew Research, they did a study not too long ago where they were looking at the religious landscape in America. And they found that the fastest growing segment of the so-called religiously affiliated are actually people who have no religious affiliation, people who are not identifying with any religious affiliation. And those are millennials and Generation Z.
Wow.
My heart breaks because I'm a millennial. And I talk to many people my age who are like, I would never go to church. I could never be a Christian, because they look at the way that we respond to things and they say, I could never do that. That's immoral. And it concerns me when people look at us and they're like, they're immoral. And we're supposed to be the moral standard. So that's part of the reason why I do my best to even use my social channels just to remind us as Christians that our responsibility is not, for example, to any political party. Our responsibility is to the kingdom of God and to make sure that we reflect him in everything that we say and everything that we do.
You know, one of the things that you work closely with is social media and the internet. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you address in your book that I think is important, and I think it applies to especially to the younger generations, is the idea of knowledge and understanding and wisdom and the difference between them. Because with the internet, we all have just the world of knowledge at our fingertips. Understanding can be a little bit harder to get, and it seems like wisdom is completely lacking in so many areas of our culture. What do you see when you look at those things and the importance of getting those right?
Yeah. Well, I think what has happened is we have started to confuse knowledge with wisdom. So we say, well, I know the right thing. Mm-hmm. But knowing the right thing in our mind is not necessarily going to lead to the practice of what is right. Mm-hmm. And that is wisdom. I talk about how in the book, when I was younger, I remember the G.I. Joe would end their cartoon always saying, you know, and now you know, and knowing is half the battle. And I was always like, well, what is the other half? And what I realized is just knowledge for knowledge's sake doesn't actually create righteousness in the world. Mm-hmm. Righteousness in the world is created through application. And that's why understanding is important. And so I think, again, as Christians, we have the responsibility to demonstrate through the work of our hands, the words of our mouth, where we go, what we do. We have to demonstrate what knowledge applied can do, and it creates righteousness in the world.
Nona, talk to us about your work with Faith and Prejudice. It's very important.
Well, I got to tell you, I had no desire to create a new organization over the summer. But so shortly after George Floyd was murdered back in, I think that was May, end of May, I was out for a run. And as you know, I mean, there was a lot of conversation happening about race, and people were like, we have to do something. I was like, well, Lord, you know, what can I do? I'm one person. What can I do? And I felt led, because I do work in the social technology space, to use social technology to try to educate the church nationally about issues of race and injustice in America. And so we did a week of broadcast conversations with civil rights leaders, theologians, scholars, about the history of race and what our responsibility as Christians would be to address it. And we had 6 million people reached over the week. Wow. We had 33,000 comments, and I mean, it was incredible to see God work. But the mission of Faith and Prejudice is to bring the church together to confront and dismantle racism in America. And the reason for that is, again, this generation is watching. They care about these issues. And so I think it's important for the church to take a lead position on it, not to deny it. It is sin. Let's just call it what it, racism is sin. And that's why we have to do what we can to eliminate the power of sin within this country. And so that requires the work of our heart and work of our hands.
Hmm. What do you think may be a blind spot that a lot of people in the church, especially people that are in the majority, don't necessarily see that they really need to know in order to find some healing and bridge some of the gaps?
Yeah, you know, I think part of our challenge is, and I'll give you an analogy. So if you've seen a beach ball, you know, there's different strips of color. So there's like a blue strip, a red strip, a yellow strip, a green strip. And I think part of our challenge is we live our life on one strip of the ball. Right. So if I'm on the blue strip, everything is blue. And if somebody was to talk to me about red, I would say there's no such thing as red, because all I know is blue.
Right.
And so I think the biggest blind spot, and I've talked to a lot of my white Christian brothers and sisters, the biggest blind spot is just recognizing that just because you haven't experienced it doesn't mean it's not real. And I think that where we get the opportunity to reflect the love of God is in saying to somebody, you know what? I don't understand, but will you help me try? That's where we have the opportunity to demonstrate the love, the humility of God in a world that is filled with pride, in a world that is saying, if I haven't experienced it, it's not real. We have the opportunity to say, you know what? I haven't experienced that, but help me understand where you're coming from.
Right,
and
right.
That becomes love.
Yeah. What do you think the biblical view of race is?
You know, I think that God did not design us to categorize ourselves by race. I think, unfortunately, that has become a construct in our world, especially when you think back to the first enslaved Africans arrived here in the U.S. It became about the Black people who were enslaved and the white people who were enslaving. And so there created this dichotomy of experience. And I think that's where race emerged. But God created all of us in his image. He gave all of us his likeness. And as a result of that, we may have different nations. We may have different tribes. We may even have different clans. But we are all children of God. And I think we have to return back to that, which is why when Jesus said that loving our neighbor as ourself is the second greatest command, like unto loving God.
Mm-hmm. As you can tell, Nona has so much to share. And this book, Success from the Inside Out, if you have ever experienced brokenness in your past and you think, A, I can never be free, or B, God can never use me again, this is a story that will speak life and hope to you. And I'm going to tell you how to get hold of Nona's book. But first of all, I want to ask you, Randy and I want to ask you, there's some people right now who literally are losing their lives because they have no access to any clean water. Do you know 800 million people in our world do not have access to a clean drinking source? And if you'll help us with that, then we're going to help you with Nona's book. Watch this.
I'm going to go to the house. enangwe naita kuti yamudhonsa waro sobe hina amba vakavarika rubiro atija
waibuja twavomwida heyoti yavana vesu yonse daivone yakotuto vapati tonse yonse nkuchibhadhera andiswe penawo mputumwa mutwalo mbanchinga inokuti tumutore mukliniki akwavi kwako ivoko kumpera olonkavone memba yakudyala mitestimoni tandikalupe muvumi wangu orono vanyonenda vana vangu tandivifure ambondiyeya chinthu chakandivitirira so tandivifure We are suffering here. We drink dirt water. We are asking for help.
I remember each one of these women so clearly from our last trip to Africa. You know, the woman who described what it was like when her daughter went off to get water and she was taken far too long. And so she went to the hand-dug well and there was the yellow bucket. But no little girl. And I can't imagine the horror of looking into that filthy little well, and there's her little girl. And then she took us to the place where her daughter is buried. And she was heartbroken, as you can imagine. And we sat on the rocks by that little dirty river with the woman whose daughter was taken by a crocodile. I mean, it's unspeakable horror. But here's the thing that is even more devastating. They have no other choice. We drove for hours to get to that particular village, and that's the only water they've got. And so that's why I love what we do with Water for Life, because you can unpack it so many ways. It brings life to a village, but it also gives life to the children of that village. Do you know that we've been able to put in, with your help, over the years, 7,000 wells. That is amazing. But our commitment this year, Randy, is we want to put in 350 more wells. And I know we can do it.
Oh, we can, but we have to have your help. And you know, Sheila, when you mentioned those women that you were there with listening to their stories, I just think these are stories that unfortunately are repeated in various forms all over the world. But they're stories that you can rewrite. And we do it one well at a time. Now, here's the breakdown on those wells. The average well costs $4,800. Some of you can give an entire well. I think there may be that rare person out there that can give, I don't know, 5-10 wells. If you can do it, I would encourage you to do it. You know, because those wells service an average of 1,000 people each for... It's decades. That's why we call it a lifetime, because they last so long typically. You can rewrite these stories. Now, obviously, many of you don't have the wherewithal to drill an entire well by yourself. Will you partner with others? Here's the breakdown. $48 will help provide clean water for 10 people for a lifetime. $144 will help provide clean water for 30 people. For a lifetime. Are you seeing the pattern here? When we join together, when you go online, when you go to the phone right now, you start to rewrite the stories, and every story is precious. Every life is precious. Will you do it? Will you do it today? I pray you will. Go to the phone, go online, make the best gift you can, and join us as we give water for life.
Dirty, disease-filled water. How desperate would a mother need to be to consider giving this contaminated substance to her child? For many mothers and their families living in extreme poverty, this is their only choice. But with your help, they won't have to make this choice ever again. Mission Water for Life provides clean, disease-free water for thousands of children and their families, giving them a life free from the fear of death. With your gift today, you can help drill and establish 350 water wells this year. Your gift of $24 will help provide clean water for 5 children. A gift of $48 will help provide for 10. $72 will provide for 15, and $144 will help provide life-giving water for 30 people for a lifetime. With your gift, we'll send you Speak Your Name, devotions and declarations on the reality of Jesus. Filled with stunning imagery, these 40 encouraging devotions by Lainey Renee serve as a reminder of the power of Jesus' name. With your gift of $100 or more, please request the Be Refreshed Pitcher. This beautiful ceramic pitcher is decorated with Proverbs 11:25 and is sure to make a lovely addition to your table or home. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,200 to help provide water for 250 people, or a gift of $4,800 to help sponsor a complete well. And you may request our brand new inspiring bronze sculpture, Divine Servant. Please call, write, or make your gift online.
This is the water. This is the only water that is available to this village where we have been spending some time. And honestly, as a mom, it totally horrified me to see little ones just scooping this water and drinking it immediately. I mean, you can probably see it's absolutely filthy. But I feel here that one of our main passions at Life Outreach is that God has called, it's in our DNA, to be a voice for those who have no voice. And so that's why I'm coming to you and saying to you, we can be the answer to their prayers. So please, will you help us right now? Will you dial that number on your screen? Go online. Just give the best gift you can. You know, give up one thing that you don't really need to give these people the one thing they really, really need: fresh, clean water.
Thank you for going online or going to the phones right now. I do hope you will give the best gift you can, and just know that it is our mission to give life around the world, but we can only do it when you reach out and join us. Thank you for that. And as a reminder, Sheila's got a gift for you if you request it today.
Absolutely. For any gift at all, we will be honored and thrilled to send you Nona's book. It's called Success from the Inside Out. But boy, it is a book that speaks life to you. So, Nona, thank you so much for being with us. We've just loved it.
Thank you. This has been an honor. I appreciate you both very much.
It's been great. And we will see you all next time on Life Today. It's from Randy. I'm Sheila. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Giving includes so much more than money. So once you learn to give, it changes everything about your life.
Tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.